port to this computer. All right, cool. I know that Rob had submitted some questions. He might be hopping on in a few minutes. I'll wait for him to hop in before I tackle his stuff. So we'll just jump in. Allie, feel free to type your questions. LaRosa, do you have anything that you had questions on?
No questions this time around.
Cool. All right. Well then, I'll wait till you get your questions typed up, Allie, and we'll tackle those. And in the meantime, we can shoot the breeze for like 20 seconds while Allie types. There's Rob. Short breeze. Rob's hopping in. I know
I've been
Rob had.
watching, spending the week watching YouTube videos and all the generate blocks stuff.
Oh yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. I know that we got the admin bar. He's been going crazy on those videos on like how to do all like the pseudo classes and stuff. And I think it's a cool tool. Interestingly, did you see how I was playing around? I discovered this, and then I saw that the admin bar guy made a video on it. How you can use generate blocks to create the classes and style the classes, but you can apply those classes to other blocks. And then, in a way, I've been doing that with the Spectre blocks. It's such a hack. I don't. I'm a. Here's my concern. I'm worried that the generate blocks team will clean up how CSS classes are called, and not use the ones if those classes aren't on the page, and so they won't apply to other blocks. I'm afraid they'll like fix that before it's out of alpha. So I don't want to like get too interested in styling blocks that way. But and
Yeah.
then.
It'll be interesting if they come around and do like the core framework or ACCS.
Yeah, I'm interested in if they do that. I honestly, I've been kind of, I haven't been, I've been pinging Adam and Sujay from Astra, and I've been like pinging them saying like we really need class styling in Spectra, and they haven't gotten back to me yet. But that thinking got me looking at the global styles editor inside of Spectra. Have you played around with that at all?
A little bit.
So it's really not that different. And honestly, I think that's the route they're going to double down on, because if you watch even 5 minutes of these videos from Generate Blocks editing custom CSS, it's like dot class name underscore underscore da 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 pseudo class blah 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 hover state blah. It's like, okay, clearly this is made for someone that's going to be more geared towards being a developer and not geared towards your average Joe. Like our clients would never in a million years even know what to do with that kind of stuff. So what's going to end up, so what I think that the Astra team is going to do is they're going to double down on the global styles, where right now it functions almost identically. I can take a background section, I can put a block in it, I can give every little piece a global style, and then I can save those as patterns, and I can almost do exactly what I can do with generate blocks from a styling perspective. The only thing I can't really do that I really like, really really like, is the hover, like the pseudo classes. I love the ability to like manipulate what happens on hover, what happens on mouse, so like all those different little sub selectors. I think generate blocks has done a phenomenal job with that, and with the mobile and tablet styling. So I am watching it with keen interest, because I am worried, not worried, I'm hopeful that it will be very neat for what we can create. But at the same time, it's like I hate knowing in the back of my mind I'm hacking together two systems. So like, and I don't want to like start adopting generate blocks in case Spectra does stuff with their container. But at the same time, they're compatible. I bought generate blocks; it works totally fine. So I don't know. We can talk more on that. But I want to tackle some things here. And Ali got some questions into chat real quick. Allie, if you don't mind, Rob had asked his questions in the community first. That's kind of like our long-standing thing as we tackle those questions. So, Rob, real quick, unless Rob, you want to pass, Rob, let's tackle your form questions on like the summary and other things.
I watched your watched your video, Doug, but for some reason, the one I was editing was my new one I created today, which is Japan Travel Guide Pack.
Yep, I'm just sharing my screen. If you don't mind, I'm on your site and I'm going to
Yeah,
go
sure.
to custom forms. And you are editing this one. I'm going to
That's
edit
right,
it with
yeah.
block editor. So first things first, this column thing is just a Thrive Theme Builder styling front end issue. It's on the back end, but it doesn't happen on the front end. So that's that.
Right, okay.
Little obnoxious. This right here
Yeah.
with a summary. So yeah, when I
Yeah.
select it, it is on the right. So like,
Sorry, just minimize that.
for
Yeah.
example, here's the look at this right column. If I click on summary, it does change.
Yeah.
And if I
But
click over here, it highlights it, but it's the same thing.
how do you edit the elements within that block?
So you open up the list view here, or the document overview. I call it the list view, document
Yeah.
overview. And then you expand out the total section and you have all of these sub items.
Yeah.
And you
I
can click on them. But the thing is here, your cart is empty. So you have to add something into your cart.
Oh, Christ.
So here,
Okay.
well, this is really strange because this product is technically in the cart, but it's not. I'm gonna remove the Japan travel pack and re-add it. Japan, is that it right there? The $26.99?
Any that's not it, but anything I do.
I want to. It is your actual thing, Japan.
Yeah, it is that one. That 49.
49. Okay, that fixed it.
Ah, interesting. So it's just another interface glitch by the looks of it.
Yeah,
Because
I don't.
I couldn't until you did that. I couldn't, edit any of these, subsections on the totals form.
I've never seen that one before, but it's WordPress, and if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. So I would just
Yeah.
say always trouble. It's like the have you tried turning it off and on again
Yeah, and the
when it
funny thing
comes?
was, I came out of the form and went back in it to just think,
Yeah.
oh, is it a refresh thing? But okay, yeah, so that's what it is. Yeah, I just
And then you can select each of these.
yeah, okay, that's cool. That's fine. I can work with that then. Yeah, no, it's just yeah, these kind of things just really, really bug me because they are bugs. It's just a quirk of obviously these interfaces, but
Yep.
yeah,
And
it's just frustrating.
I run into these things all the time, which is why to me, like my brain just is automatically wired to say, oh,
Yeah.
okay, this isn't appearing. Let me remove it and re-add it.
Yeah.
And that's across like all of WordPress. Like, oh, my permalinks aren't working. Let me just resave them. And now suddenly your permalinks work again. Or in Thrive, like, oh, this isn't working. Let's just resave it. And suddenly it works. I think it's just a WordPress thing.
Yeah,
Anyway,
when you're
it
adding
does
all
work
these
fine.
layers, it just kind of stacks up, doesn't it? The other thing, Doug, that what I wanted, because I thought, okay, I'm doing this, but I'm thinking, yeah, I've done this before with other kind of products. Is there a way to save, build a basic form and then save that form as a template and just reuse that every time? Or is the only way to do it to go into a pre-existing product, a custom form, sorry, and clone it or something?
It's so there's two ways you could do it. You can two ways to do it. You can do it exactly what you just said. I could go to custom forms and I could literally just duplicate this one. That's
Yeah.
what I do. It's just so easy to
Yeah.
just like duplicate the whole thing and then just switch the product like you saw me do. Alternatively, if you have two pages open, you can click on form up here and you can literally just click these three dots and click copy. And then literally go into any other form and hit Control V, and it will literally
Right.
paste in your whole form. Alternatively, you can select like pieces of the forms. What I wish you could do is select this form right here and then make a pattern. Actually, what happens if
Yeah.
I unlock? I think I might be able to unlock this. Where did the
Oh,
lock
right.
option go? Unlock. Yeah, that's fine. Unlock it all. Thought I just did that. Unlock. Unlock, apply. Cool. All that does is make it undeletable. Let's just lock all. So
Okay.
what I was wishing you could do is select this and then under these three dots create a pattern, because what you can do is, like, for example, let's say that I get a section of columns I really like. I can click these three dots and then I can click create pattern right here.
Right, yeah.
And that will just let me reuse that section. So what you can do is you can save individual pieces as patterns, and then it would just be as simple as typing like slash and then whatever you named the pattern.
Okay, no,
But
that's
really,
fine.
Rob,
What?
it's just my real recommendation here is just go to custom forms
and just duplicate one that I'm
literally
happy
just hit
with.
the duplicate
Yeah.
and it does the exact, or clone, it does the exact same thing. Clone
I
it, change the product.
could have saved myself an hour and a half there wasting time. It's just crazy. You know, like someone like me does this and it's like there's an hour and a half gone. You'd look at it and it's like, you know, it's about 30 seconds. It's just so sad.
That's why I can do this.
Yeah, okay. All right,
And then
that's
you
great. Thanks, Doug. I appreciate that.
yep, I think did you was that all the questions that you had posted? I have your thing right here.
I don't remember.
Da, 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 that's oh yeah, so
Oh,
go ahead.
yeah, no, yeah. I added another comment saying, yeah, that was good, but obviously, I dive straight into the video in the course that I was interested in, as anyone would do, and I was just saying, you know, maybe put some copy underneath the videos that are affected.
You didn't miss, so you didn't miss anything. I just literally recorded them this morning.
Oh, okay.
And I replied back. I think I replied within a second of you. So it was like, and
All right.
I added it into
Oh, I see.
and I added it onto the lesson.
Oh,
It's
cool.
here's why I was dragging my feet on that. I was waiting for them to reach a point where they weren't going to keep making interface updates,
Yeah,
thinking that I could just go make one video, but they've dragged their
yeah.
feet and then I forgot. So I have done that.
Okay. That's terrific. Great.
I've added it in both
Perfect.
places.
Great. Thanks, Doug.
Yep.
Cheers.
All
We live and
right.
learn.
I will stop sharing unless I need to share again. I'm going to pull up Ali's questions now. Ali asks, what's a good tofu strategy for indie creators with very few leads? Is that top of funnel? Or what is tofu to you, Ali? You can
Yeah,
type it
top.
out. Ali's kind of lagging. Okay, top of funnel. What's a good top of funnel strategy for indie creators with very few leads? It's a little bit vague, Ali, but I kind of think I understand what you're saying. And I have a course that I'm working on that I'm, where did my Zoom go? There it is. I have a course that I'm working on that I think is going to be one of my best things I've done. And it has to do with creating a flywheel. Actually, first, let me read your number two and three to make sure I don't jump the gun. Testing best practices, have a dummy site. Okay, that's different. How do you get WordsMember login? Okay, that's it. Okay. So let's dive in real quick into this idea of a top of funnel strategy. And then, by the way, please feel free to clarify, Ali, what you mean by top of funnel strategy. I'm going to start talking about what I think is you mean, and then feel free to type and interrupt me. So I'm gonna, how do I share this image? Share screen. Sure, let's share this. Okay, so this is a model, the flywheel business model, and I have really been, I'm actually building my own version of this and adapting it slightly. This is what I've essentially done for my entire business. I've never spent a dollar in advertising on any of my businesses. I've never had a sales team on any of my businesses, and I've always started them with almost zero capital down. And here's how I do it. So in this basic model, it's the attract people who are strangers. It's the engage people who are prospects. And then those people become customers. You delight them, they become promoters or fans, and then that they complete the circle by bringing in more strangers and talking about them. So in the course that I'm developing, I go into what I do at each of these stages. And for you, your question specifically on top of funnel engagement, here's my top of funnel strategy. And it just comes down to, you probably already know what I'm going to say. So in this world, and we talked about this on the mastermind call yesterday, in this world where I feel like content is so bloated and it's so hard to find anything that's valuable out there, in my industry, people have a problem. And I think if you take the word problem and you change it to fit whatever you're talking about, people have something they want solved. They want to find something. Whatever it is they need, people need something. And if you can even solve one problem or help fulfill a need, even in a fraction of a way, you have engaged that person. I'll use myself as an example because it's the easy way to explain this. I started off by creating some videos about Thrive or whatever I create videos about. And that got people interested and they said, oh, wow, this Doug guy. Yes, I'm going to read your context. Nice if context helps, we're hesitant to do a typical digital marketing such as podcasts, YouTube channels. You're hesitant to do typical stuff. Well, it's typical to create YouTube. It is kind of typical to do YouTube videos. So my question to you, because I was going to go down the strategy of saying create videos or hold. I know, are you guys doing like the pickleball thing? Is that what your business is about? Yeah. So like, In your market, I was going to say do YouTube videos, and I think in your market that would actually be a phenomenal way to like just take the camera to the gym and or wherever you guys play and record things and put it out there in your local community and on Facebook. I feel like that would actually do phenomenally. But if you're hesitant to record anything, I feel like you could probably, and I forget where you guys live. Maybe it's like Idaho or Iowa or something, but like I feel like you could easily get the community involved and say, "Hey, we're
Yeah, we
running."
moved to Utah to play pickleball.
Yeah, like I feel like there's got to be like you can get involved in City of Commerce. Like I've actually done that with a couple of my clients. We've done their City of Commerce groups, and we've joined and we've let them know that we're starting a pickleball club. Or I'm just speaking as if I were you, letting them know that we've started this new thing. And if they wanted to share it, it's a great way to get people active and involved. It's a great family activity. It's a great thing to do on the weekends. Doesn't take any investment. Like I would start sharing it. But in terms of top of funnel, I always tend to go more digital. And I still think that would work for you, being able to just create, like, it doesn't have to be overly produced. I think that's the problem that people fall into with going the digital content route, is they feel like, oh, if I make YouTube videos, they have to be really well edited. I don't edit my stuff really well. I do jump cuts, and it's just I don't have an editor. It takes me 10 minutes to do it. I feel like you could put something out there that feels authentic, and you could put something out there that is true to like your organization. And simply putting YouTube videos out there about pickleball in XYZ city, and maybe just posting that to your website so that there's just some like minor amount of SEO. Anyone who's interested in playing pickleball in your city will find that in Google because it's a niche and Google will index it. Taking it further for top of funnel, I'd want to know like what kind of funnel you're looking at making. Is this a get people to buy funnel, which I'm sure it is because it's business, right? But also like, or is this a get people to know you exist funnel? Is this a grow your email list funnel? There are like, unfortunately, like I said, it's kind of vague. There are so many ways that you could work, tweak a funnel in this type of setup. But assuming you're wanting people to buy something, I would fall back on what I'm comfortable with, which is give something for free, entice people to come in and see that there's something for free until you prove that value. And then once they're aware of who you are, and once they're aware that you create a lot of fun and a safe environment to enjoy an activity and you're not going anywhere. That's another thing that I think is really important, is establishing the fact that you're not just going to pop up one week, get people's interest, and then disappear, and then they're going to be stuck looking for another solution. It took me a while to, I think, generate trust with people that I wasn't just some random guy who's trying to make money on YouTube. But I think once people realize, oh, wow, this pickleball thing's been around for 3, 4 months, and oh, wow, they have classes, and oh, look, they've recorded some of their classes. I know what I'm getting into. I think that for me would be a big thing. If I'm a little bit different, obviously, I live inside, but if I were to go outside, which is very rare, and if I were to engage with something in the community, I would want to know what I'm getting myself into. I'm a little bit of an ambivert that way. And I have to imagine that a lot of people share that similarity of like, before I go pay for something, I want to know what it's like. And that's, again, I'll fall back to my strategy. But I would say 90% of the people before they ever give me a dollar know, like, and trust me from the content that I've put out. And I've been able to help my clients in a variety of industries get people to know, like, and trust them because of their free content. I can use examples. Rob's the exact same. Rob puts out tons of free content about traveling to Japan. People read that content, and now Rob's the expert on traveling to Japan. In their minds, Rob solved a problem, piqued their interest, and they book a call with Rob. Same thing applies to me. I'm going to read your thing. It says, we need a lot of brand awareness. We're basing our funnel on three personas and on the customer journey. It's interesting. So I've always bucked the trend of building personas and avatars for my business. I've never done it. Like for Conviology, I've never once built a here's my ideal customer. And I've never tailored anything that I've ever done to a persona because maybe I have indirectly, but here's how I've approached it. Here's how I approached it with Conviology, and I've done it with other businesses, but let's use Conviology as an example. I have a tool. I discovered some things that were friction for me, difficulties learning something. I figured it out. I shared my solution. I was sure that someone else would have had the same friction. In your case, you could say, you know what, there's not really a lot of people providing an environment to play pickleball or structured organization or league or, you know, whatever it is. And by putting that out there, I feel like you will, without saying, I need to target someone in their mid-30s with two kids who plays pickleball every day, or I need to target someone who doesn't know what pickleball is, I would just put stuff out there. I feel like we oftentimes get stuck in our own heads of trying to make sure we target the right person, when instead I do it very differently, and this may not be helpful to you, but I am more of the put it out there, cast a very wide net, and then let your fish decide they want to come into your net, versus really strategically, surgically going after that one particular fish with a particular type of bait you know that fish likes. Because to me, it's a lot of effort to catch that fish when you could catch a bunch of other fish that, oh, you didn't even know that you could catch, and those turn out to be your perfect customers. So that's always what I tell my clients when I sit, when they're like, well, we've workshopped our avatars. I'm like, well, you know, not always a great shot, but I'm going to read Rob's comments here. Rob said a friend who owns a gym clinic posted loads of short form phone clips. He became really known. Yeah, see, that's what I'm getting at. You could just post videos from your phone. People don't care. There's this really big trend right now on YouTube where people are getting away from the Mr. Beast style editing, the hyper editing, and they're going back to more of a, I'll say my style. Literally, I just turn the camera on and I don't have a script. I just talk and I do hopefully minimal editing. Rob also said, yeah, my friend shot lots of quick questions with clients about before after experiences and pushed all the interested into a free in-person consultation. His business offers sports coaching therapy treatments. Yeah, I think I'd be interested in knowing maybe a little more why you're averse to the video digital side. And I know why you're probably averse to like the SEO strategy. If you're thinking that you're having to get into this big SEO game, I really don't think you do. You were breaking up when you told me where you guys are at. Did you say Utah? Or yeah, I'm familiar with Utah. Is it like Northern Utah where it's literally like Cowtown, or is it like Southern Utah? Southern Utah? Yeah, so like St. George, Hurricane, that kind of area. So you'll have no problem ranking for like pickleball in St. George. I have family that lives in St. George. I know a lot about St. George. That area, you'll have no problem posting just a few things on a website, and Google will eat it up. I'm sure Google's starving for that kind of info. You say that there's a hesitancy to put out polished things. I think Rob can relate to that. When our time is super strapped, yeah, I can relate to that. So I'll just keep going back to this idea that things don't have to be polished. You don't have to have fancy A-roll, B-roll, you know, transitions and music in the background. You don't need to go get an Artlist subscription or an Epidemic Sound. You can literally just take out an iPhone. I have an iPhone 12. I think it's kind of getting old, but you can get like the iPhone 14 and 15s. Those cameras are so stinking good that I was looking at getting like a $6,000 camera because I was like, ooh, maybe I can shoot my videos in 4K. And then I'm like, wait a minute, the 14, 15s look even better. And I just use a Canon EOS R M50 old camera. And it doesn't matter. I feel like at the end of the day, it truly doesn't matter. If I try to remind people, like, think about you as a consumer. And this isn't always a great thing to think about because some people are different, but I'm not drawn to the flashy high-end production. I actually get, like, it actually has the opposite effect on me. If I were to think about starting to play pickleball, I would want to get involved with a pickleball group that is down to earth, approachable, relatable, family-friendly. If I started seeing all these like really super high-produced videos, I would be actually intimidated. I would think that you guys are probably more too much for me. So there's a psychology to it. There were some studies that I was reading. I can't source them right now. But there were some studies that showed when people did overproduced things, it psychologically had an effect. And when people did underproduced things, It had a completely separate effect on people, and it actually influenced purchasing decision. One of those examples in this study, I'm sure I'll never find it again, was with like women's makeup YouTube channels, where like they get on there and they talk about like, I got this makeup from CVS or from a pharmacy, and let me try it out. And the videos are just literally them talking to their phone, and they've got millions of followers on YouTube because people trust them. Versus if someone were to do some Kardashian style editing, there's plenty of trust there. Billions of people love them, but it's a different type of market, and the people get drawn to really personable people. And I'm just reading some comments here. I agree with Rob, it is perfectly fine for your audience. And then LaRosa said, yeah. So LaRosa's comment was probably towards the produced videos, right? Like if it looks overproduced, it looks expensive and it looks unapproachable. Whereas if this just was an awesome video shot from your phone saying, we had an awesome session. I don't know enough about pickleball. Clearly, I don't go outside. Like, we had an awesome game Saturday, and whatever. We have plenty of room for more. We hope you'll come out and join us. And then just talk to those like top line benefits. Like, it's a great way to have a family, wholesome family fun. When things are so expensive these days, this is a really approachable activity to get your kids outside. I don't know if you target kids or just adult leagues, but like, it's a great way to get everyone involved or to get some exercise in. Like, you could pitch that in a video. I actually think you would do phenomenal. I think like you would really attract a lot of people. And again, I'll emphasize, I have less than 2,000 subscribers, but I made over $100,000 when I had less than 800 subscribers. It's nothing to do with the number of people that watch your videos. So don't make YouTube videos to become a YouTuber. Don't even pay attention to the subscriber count, because I doubt people would subscribe to your channel. Like, they don't really subscribe to mine, but they become aware of you, and your market's probably like mine. I don't need 1,000 customers. I just need a couple hundred, and you probably just need a few hundred, maybe a few dozen people playing. So that's a lot of talking. But yeah, please keep us posted. I know that wasn't extraordinarily like actionable, but I do think you could rethink your hesitancy on the very little SEO involved. And then, like we talked about this on the mastermind, which you can go back and watch, Ali. We talked about how like I haven't been doing a lot of SEO on my website, but I've been making videos on YouTube, and Google has been putting those videos at the top of YouTube searches, and they're outranking the people that make the tools with just my YouTube videos. I bet your pickleball videos that are literally just about your league or about whatever you're doing would rank quite well at the top for someone that was searching for pickleball league in wherever you're in St. George or something like that.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense actually, because especially if it's Google, Google wants to keep you on their platform. So they will send you to YouTube first before they send you anywhere else.
Yep. It's been to my benefit. I checked my again, I talked about this yesterday, so Rob's heard it, but I looked at my analytics in YouTube, and your YouTube channel will tell you where people are finding your videos, and 30% of my people 30% of people are finding my YouTube videos by clicking on them directly from a Google search. And that I thought was incredible. And then I looked at my website traffic, and I saw that I think it was close to 30% as well of my website traffic was from my YouTube channel. And I'm implementing better tracking to find out what the conversion rate is. I have some tracking, which is how I've been able to know how much money I've generated from my channel. But I'm getting better at tracking. I'm trying to get better at figuring out and tracking how do I track someone from Google to my channel from there. And it's a tough one to track because Google doesn't give that data, but I'll crack that nut sometime. All right. Ali said, cool. Yeah. Definitely let us know how it goes. You're in St. George, moved back in November for pickleball. You moved to St. George for pickleball? Did I read that right, Ali? Oh my gosh, dedication.
Yeah. I wish I could, I didn't have lag. There's so many things I want to say in response. It's just really good info. But yeah, this Kieran's trade is racket sports, and he's a fantastic coach, and his training style is very different from what's commonly taught. So it's a little more than just go play pickleball, but I'll show you in our website. We're revamping it already, even though we just launched. And I think that'll help give some clarity as to what the product is too.
Yeah. And if you're a pickleball coach, that's even better because people are actively searching for that. Right. So you could easily make a YouTube video about how your style is different. I think you just nailed it with saying that Kieran's coaching style is so different from what else is out there. Honestly, that's how my wife, she teaches piano lessons. That's like the big bulk of her business. She gets most of her clients because of how different she is from everybody else around here. Mm-hmm. And we just emphasize that, like, are you looking for a teacher that is this way instead of this way? And boom, instantaneous wait list. It's just, I think you'll do just fine with just a little bit of SEO. And I don't even think you need to call it SEO. Like I would say, like, I work with clients a lot that get intimidated by that. Just take that word out of your vocabulary entirely and say, I'm going to put a little bit about myself on the internet, but I'm going to do a couple strategic things that help me with it. I'm going to create a couple videos that talk about me. I'm going to create a couple videos that showcase what we do. Maybe get into a semi-regular, it doesn't have to be regular. Look at my channel. I'm irregular as heck, but you could say like, make a couple dozen videos. They don't have to be long, and then pop them out there. I think you'll absolutely rank in Google easily. Yeah, Rob had to Google pickleball. Yeah, I did this years ago. Someone was like, oh yeah, pickleball. And I'm like, is that like racquetball? And then like, I looked it up and it was like, they use these rackets that look like, I'm a bit of a nerd, but if you've ever watched like Star Trek, or like Deep Space Nine, they have this like game called Parisi Squares, or they have like these like rackets that look space age. And I'm like, is it like that? And then I looked it up and it's like, okay, it's like, still don't really know what it is, but it looks like a wiffle ball, ping pong meets Star Trek racquetball. I don't know, it's the weirdest sport ever. But it's popular. People here play it too. We have a couple gyms in our city. We have like over 100,000 people in our city, but yeah, people are
I think what you touched on it earlier, Doug, I think the fact that it is so niche and the fact that Kieran's got an angle, that's, you know, that's just going to be right at the top of the results. It will be, especially if it's regional, because there'll be so little competition and it's so specific, you know, and that's a long tail stuff. And that's great because there'll be like instant like waiting lists. There's just such a good target. I mean, your funnel at the top would be so much warmer than a lot of other businesses because you're so niche.
I agree. And I think that, especially in your market, not to overtalk about it, but like St. George with, I know someone that started a homeschool down there, brand new. I mean, if you think about the market in Hurricane/St. George, it like eats up the idea of a brand new homeschooling type thing. And then like, I know someone else that moved out there, and they started another business, and it's so easy because you're not talking about a ton of people. Like, you're not talking about a ton of people at all in that area. A good number. It's not like it's a small town or anything, but that market is very, it's very easy to share things in that market and get people interested. So I don't think you'll have a problem at all. Super easy. Cool.
Yeah, I would imagine it's great word of mouth referral as well.
Yeah, it's a big family market down there too. Lots of families, lots of people. Sure.
Like, yeah, I mean, we want to go global eventually with this because it is a digital business, but our strategy is mainly local, regional. But that didn't actually connect for me until this discussion. So like, my mind is expanding so much. I can't wait to like talk to Kieran and show him this recording and come back to you guys. This is so helpful.
Office hours, mission accomplished.
Yeah. Tell your friends. Cool. All right. Any other questions or anything from anybody? No? Well, feel free to interrupt. I'm welcome to hang out for another 20 minutes.
One thing I did see, Doug, I mean,
Do we want to visit my other two questions?
Oh, I completely spaced it. Allie asked two more questions. I got all involved in pickleball.
No, babe. We're luring you in. This is an top of the funnel strategy that's here.
See how easy it is? Test. Okay, number two. Here we go. Sorry about that, Allie. Testing best practices. I have a dummy site. What's the email to use, such as Doug plus Doug? How does that work? Okay, so if I understand your question right, Allie, you're saying, how do you test out things with an email like that? How does that email work?
Yes, for sure. That is definitely a big thing. I've never understood this plus sign test thing.
Yeah, so if you have a Gmail account or a Google Workspace account, both obviously Google in this case, other providers are similar, but I can't speak to them with certainty. They've since piggybacked on this. But if you have a Gmail account, for example, you can put the plus symbol and then anything you want after it, and then the at sign. And that's called, I think it's called an alias. And so you can essentially have unlimited, for me, Doug plus anything I want at convology.com. And I can create filters in my Gmail, or I can just have those be an infinite number of test emails. LaRosa says it works with most email providers. Yeah, I have to imagine it does. And then, so like whenever I'm doing something and I don't want to use, and I've already signed up with Doug at Convology, like on my own website, I'll do like even yesterday I was doing some test on a Shurkart funnel. I was like Doug plus, and I just mashed my keyboard with my fingers at convology.com. And you can use this actually strategically. You can create filters in your email and say, if I get an email to Doug plus test at Convology, put it in this folder. You can do that in Gmail. I'm sure you can do it in every other provider too. Create email filters. And so that's how I test things on dummy checkouts and dummy sites. Was that all that you were asking with the dummy site thing, or was there more like dummy site questions?
Yeah, I know. I think it's just that testing isn't in my wheelhouse. And so we just launched here in business. And it's more of like, I just don't know what I'm doing, even though it's built, you know, we use Astro and Spectrum, yada, yada, and it's built for the layman, but it's just to know if there are some additional things I should, best practices I should keep in mind. It's mainly because I noticed there's little things, like little technical things, like this sign-in page might look different. And I'm thinking, wait, why is that different? And then documenting that and remembering, what did I do to get there? So I'm kind of all over. It's more, what are the best practices in general? Does that mean I should have an extra site that I do everything there first with the test email? Is there a best way to document besides in spreadsheets and my random notes? That kind of.
I would not spin up a separate website environment for testing out your own funnels. I think that can be overkill. Shurkart alleviated some of the friction there because everything's headless, which means it's not on your server. But let's pretend you used WooCommerce. If you were to duplicate your WooCommerce website, you could open a can of worms where people's subscriptions renew in the background. There have been advances on some tools. I think LaRosa brought one up not too long ago, a couple sessions ago, about some like InstaWP type sites that spin up. But I just think that's overkill. What I do, I'll just share what I do. So whenever I test my own funnels, I make sure I open up an incognito window. I look at it logged out, and then I create a backend account for, you know, Doug at whatever, or Doug plus tester one at convology.com. I run through the funnel with my test account, make sure I got the emails, make sure everything worked. I do use test mode. Don't know how familiar you are with like Stripe test mode with Shurkart or whatever tools you're using. Every checkout has a test mode. You can put it in test mode, run through that. I've never tested a funnel in live mode. I trust test mode. So I don't, if that's, you know, some people are like, oh, I changed my price to be $1 and I test it just to make sure. You don't need to do that. Test mode of Stripe is good enough. And then run through that funnel. And if everything looks good for that test user, I just trust it. I don't have like a prescribed, here's how I test everything spreadsheet. I literally just, maybe I'm just simple. I just create something and then I look at it in an incognito window and I log in with another user. I check it logged out, logged in. And if it looks good, I call it a day. Don't know if that's too helpful, but I don't think you need to do much more. I don't think any of us are really at the scale of like developing SOPs and like documentation on our deployment. Like I have clients that are that way. I have clients that every time a new sales page is made, there's like a 6-page process we have to go through to launch that thing. I'm just not there. Your third question, Allie. Actually, real quick, I saw LaRosa said that he creates aliases for like plus client name. I do the exact same thing. So when I set up a client, like when I set them up in my high-level automation for email and I give them a sub account, I actually put the email on there as my email. So Doug plus client name at Compology, exactly like LaRosa does. And helps me keep track of any emails that come in for that client name. I know what client they're for, so that I don't use my own email. It avoids having the client get any emails as well. All right, let's go to your third question, Allie. Let's see here. Number three, how do you get the words member login with the icon on your homepage? Let's go look at my homepage. Oh, yeah, it's pretty easy to do. We log in. Let's see, where did my screen go? Sure, let's do this one. Okie doke. You're talking about this right here. So to do that, I used to use Thrive Theme Builder, but you're using Astra Spectra, right? Yep. Okay, so to do
Yep.
that, what I'm going to show you is I'm going to show you how I built my navigation. I think I have a YouTube video about this as well. But if I go to my Astra, well, I'm gonna see. There's two ways to do it. I don't remember which one I currently have live. Let's go with my menu customizer. Yeah, that's what I did. Okay, so let's go to the customize option. Actually, can open that in a new tab. So I'm in the customizer. Hopefully you're familiar with it. And if I click on edit, yeah, it's just my primary menu. So that's what I thought. So step one, go into your customizer. And if you're setting want to set yours up just like mine here, so I did it. Very simple. I have site logo here, and then I have my primary menu. Super simple. And then I just went into the menu customizer. I went down and I just added an item in my normal menu. This is just my normal menu. And I called mine member login. And then I clicked on Astra menu settings right here. And then I just chose the icon. Yeah, pretty simple. Astra makes that really easy.
Really, that is so easy.
Now if you were gonna ask about doing these mega menus and stuff like that, I have a YouTube video on it. It's
Yeah, I did have mega menus. We took it off because it was overcomplicating things, just
It
like
is.
for us kicking off, wanting to keep things simple. We don't need to be so detailed on it all. So yeah, but it was really helpful to be able to easy to build.
Yeah, same thing. It's the exact same process with like having images next to your dropdowns, even on a simple dropdown, not a mega menu. Same concept. It's just the normal menu. And you come in like that was tutorials, right? So let's do shortcut tutorials, Astra menu settings. You can upload an image too. Let's say you wanted to put a picture of a pickleball racket instead or a pickleball. You can use icons, which is this one, or you can upload your own image, which is like this little upload arrow section right here. And then you can just upload whatever you want and you can choose the size, the spacing. Super easy. Works. And I think that creates a really nice looking drop down so that if people visually know what to look for, like if I were looking for, I know you don't do this kind of stuff, but if I were looking for like racket recommendations, maybe you do. You could have like a section on your site with affiliate sales and oh, it's a picture of a racket. My eye immediately clicks on it. So that's why I use the images of the logos of the tools that I recommend because people recognize the logo and it draws them in and looks better than just a plain dropdown. But that's just a personal aesthetic opinion. All right, has that answered that? Cool.
Yes, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. All right, Rob, I think you were about to ask a question at before I jumped back into Allie's number two and number three.
No, it wasn't a question really. Actually, it was just a kind of in passing type chat thing. I I was in Facebook the other day, and somebody posted in the Thrive Cart, was it also Thrive Cart Academy group or something? And it was quite a clever little post actually, because he was basically sharing how he built his funnel with Thrive Cart, and the way he was explaining it was exactly how he does it, which is he posts in Facebook groups. But it was just quite it was quite a well kind of crafted pitch, really. And it just generated a whole buzz of interest. But what I took away from it, I actually copied his post and pasted it into a Google Doc so I could refer to it later, because I'm just paranoid about these things disappearing. But what I liked about it was he explains at every stage how it works, and also what the so there's a low ticket front end offer. There was a bump to increase the initial sort of average order value. There was an upsell offer, which was 50 to 100 times the initial cost. And then there was a back end higher ticket nurture sequence. But the point was, he had a kind of almost like about a $200 product, but he was offering it for $1 at the front. So that was
Oh, I
kind
saw
of
that.
his trick. Yeah. And but I liked the structural approach to it. And I thought, actually, for what some of the stuff I'm building, this could work quite well for me. So I'm gonna, I might, and I did as I did, I mentioned it in the community. I bought some email sequence stuff about a month or so ago, and I just had a sort of a day where I just thought, I'm going to just take some time out and just dive in and do some testing. And I did follow one of this guy's email sequences that I tried. I did it, and it just produced a whole bunch of sales instantly. It worked a treat. And I just thought, oh, I just need to do more of this kind of stuff. And I can track who's clicking on stuff and who isn't clicking on things. So if people didn't click any of those, they won't have got into that sequence at all. So I'm going to try something similar to what that guy was posting about in the Thrive Cart Facebook group, but I'm going to try it with those other people who were sent the previous sequence but didn't open anything, and just see if I can sort of tease them open. Because I every time I do one, every time I set aside time to do one of those kind of, well, I'm just going to do a test email sequence, like a sales thing, basically, some sort of incentive thing, or just a kind of nicely worded, a well structured thing, like a pattern interruption type stuff. They just always produce sales for me. And the other thing was, I'm still sort of been testing Facebook ads, because of my map that wasn't selling. I then ran another ad last week for 7 days just on my ebooks. Didn't get a single sale that week. So that was interesting, because it was like, okay, previous week got a bunch of sales, did the map, nothing at all. Did the books again, exactly the same thing. Exactly the same ad actually, but that might have been the reason it didn't work. But yeah, and didn't get any sales. So, it's very hit and miss, but I do love testing stuff, because I really like, I've seen in the past where the classic A/B tweaks where you just change the word. And I used to do this a lot when I was doing my forms in Thrivecart. When I was first setting those up, I did lots of split testing on those, and I used the results from that split testing to guide the changes. And it really works a treat. It really does, increase the conversions.
Did you try doing we talked about maybe making the map. First off, has the map sold at all
No,
anymore?
I haven't had
Think so.
any sales. No.
Have you tried making it like an order bump?
No, but that was my next step, because I've just been playing around. The problem is, I keep going back into Thrivecart, and I think, I've got to stop going to something Thrivecart. I've
True.
got to get out of it to Surecart. So, but
True.
it's like, when I wanted to test something, I can just think, well, I can spit it up in Thrivecart because it's all up there and I know it. When I go over to Surecart, today's an example. I was thinking, I've got to put this new product in there. And I thought, no, let's stick it in Surecart. And of course, I come to a grinding halt after about an hour. So yeah, it's just
Yeah.
frustrating, but.
Interesting. I saw that same post you're talking about. The guy was talking about is gets people in with a dollar and then he spins it up to a couple $100. And I was thinking about that and I was like, okay, so it only works if you either have a really, really large audience or you have a high ticket price, right? Like, so I always try to apply things to myself and I say, okay, if I offered something for a dollar, I'd make a couple, maybe I'd make a couple $100 or a couple $1,000s. And then, okay, for those people, because I know my conversion rates, right? Like, and that this is another interesting thing. I think he mentioned this in his post, and it follows that psychology of if you can get someone to open their wallet and spend a dollar, it's a lot easier to get them to open their wallet and spend more. That's been proven, so we're not going to argue that. But like, I always am, and I think I'm different, but I'm always hesitant to participate in a funnel willingly. Like, if I see the gimmick of like, get this for a dollar, I know there's something coming at me on the back end. Like,
Yeah.
so I'm always hesitant to sign up for those
I'm the
types of
opposite.
things.
I'm always curious. And the other thing is, he was doing this. He's and so you've got to have a big audience. He was just doing this in Facebook groups, and I'm very active in about 60 Facebook groups, and I play by their rules, and they like my content, and I know which ones like allow self-promotion, which ones allow post-promotion, like don't. That some allow my giveaways, but don't allow any kind of overt commercial. So I've got all this, I've got a database in like a Google Sheet. So I know exactly what to do and what I can and can't post. So I tweak my posts accordingly. But I did run this morning because Friday's my Facebook promotion day. It just only takes me like half an hour to go into like 50 groups, tweak them all and post them. And then it just sends a load of traffic, which is that I knew one that happened the other day that, went through the roof. No, so I'm active in of 60 Facebook groups, and I know that I could apply this in a good number of those, probably not all 60, probably about half of them I could get away with it. Because the other thing that I do frequently, and this is just to A, keep a presence in there and not just always do the self-promotion bit, but I ask questions in a lot of those groups. So people know me, and the moderators particularly know me. And of the 60 groups that I've got, I've also got them filtered by whether or not they have to approve my posts or not. And about it's probably it's, it is I haven't looked at numbers, but it's probably about 50-50. About half don't have to be approved, so I know I can just, as long as I'm not stupid, I can just post stuff in those and it's going to go up there and it's rarely going to get taken down. I don't push the boundaries anyway, but the other half they would have to be approved anyway. So but I mean, so the ones that I don't have to have approved, I constantly try stuff in those groups. I might give that a try because I could see it working for me actually.
My wife does something similar. What she does most of her marketing in Facebook groups. She does piano lessons, but then she also has a website where she sells the music that she's arranged or composed or whatever, sheet music for piano. And so she'll go into all these piano groups and she'll share something. And that some groups have like Sharing Tuesday, and on Tuesday you can promote your own stuff. So whatever it might be. She always makes sales off of those, like every time. But I was thinking on the other side of this conversation with like one of the reasons that guy wanted to offer things for a dollar was was this the same guy that was tired of growing an email list and paying for people to be on that list who weren't paying, like they were costing him money?
That's right.
Like I'm a big fan of that. Like I know that I'm currently using an email tool that I could have a million people or one person, it'll cost the same, but I'm thinking like I'm trying to come up with this idea of getting away from free things that aren't my YouTube content. So like, for example, I for a really long time offered this, still do, this completely free like Thrive Theme Builder webinar tool. And it's actually it has consistently, up until recently, because of Thrive shooting themselves in the foot, it was like my number one business lead gen tool out there. Like it converted it over 40%. It was phenomenal. Thrive Theme Builder, 30-minute video, et cetera. And I gave that away for free. And I've started to think like, do I want to build funnels of free things? Like, watch this 30-minute Thrive Theme Builder video, and then I try to upsell you. Or do I want to offer like $5, $10, $15 things so that I'm only spending my time and effort advertising to, not advertising, but promoting to people who I know are already not just freeloading? Because that's a big thing that I've noticed as I brand. So in the Thrive market, I was immediately perceived as an expert and people just threw money at me in the Thrive market, right? But as soon as I started to step into other markets like the Astra, Surecart, those broader markets, they are rife with freeloader people who will never spend a dollar. And I could spend my entire day serving a market of people who will never want to pay because they're too busy wanting to buy everything off of AppSumo and spend $47 for, the next best thing. And so it's like, okay, as I expand out from just Thrive market, I know that I won't convert at 40% by having one webinar on how to use Thrive Theme Builder. And I did one test where I put like a pay what you want to download one of my templates. I made a really nice template and it said, you can have this, pay what you want, zero, or whatever you want to pay. Not a single person paid me anything for it. I got, I think, hundreds of downloads and not a dollar. And so I'm like, okay, it's not a great test, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything because I was giving something away if they wanted it. But it just made me think along the same lines, because I saw that same post and this was happening around that same time. Like, maybe I start to offer low ticket items, like $5. Why is this $5? Well, because it has value. And I mean, I'm also thinking about, like, it works a little bit better in my market because I'm selling to people who are trying to sell something, so entrepreneurs get it. But like, I am wondering if I could just be transparent and say $5. Why is it $5? Well, because yeah, I'm hoping to reach people like yourself who might be more interested in something else. I don't know. I'm intrigued by testing, just like you are intrigued by testing paid low ticket offers. And there was this, it's since disappeared, but there was this really big fad a couple of years ago, all about the tripwire, right? Let that $10 offer, run Facebook ads to it all day long, and you know, upsell it into that $10 offer into the $500 offer, right? But I do think there's merit to it, because or not, like I said, my free stuff, that free funnel made me a lot of money, but it was in the Thrive market, and so I'm worried that the markets aren't the same.
It's worth saying to anyone who's watching this, because we haven't actually, neither of us mentioned it, but he also has a kind of a coaching offer. So the point was, and he was quite explicit saying, you know, the thing is, he had 21 sales and 21 new people on his list. So that was list building at the same time. So that's all good stuff, future money and all the rest of it. But he said, you know, crucially, he got, it's like, I was it 3,500, you know, some kind of, like, you know, done for you thing. So that was his whole funnel was geared towards, and the idea is that I will get some paying clients out of this. And sure enough, he did 21 sales, and one of them ended up paying something like $3,500 for something. So yeah, I mean, you've got to have that kind of opportunity in there, I think, you know, to make a big difference.
Yeah, LaRosa, yeah, you're exactly right. Like, Thrive markets itself more towards the entrepreneur, DIY person who is more like a go-getter business type person. And then you're right, the Astra is like, reaches everybody. And yeah, I completely agree. Worth testing. I don't know, like, I'm the one thing I don't love being put into funnels. And despite the fact that I teach a lot about funnels and I implement them for my clients to great success, I don't like being in them. So I'm hesitant to build that type of funnel where it's like, here, buy my $5 template. Oh yeah, and did you know I have $180 a quarter membership? And oh yeah, did you know that I also offer coaching? Like, I don't want to sell to people like that. I want to just put it out there and say, hi, I'm Doug. I have some courses. You want to buy them? Great. Hi, I'm Doug. If you need help, here's my asynchronous coaching and my tech help calls. And this goes back to the whole idea of, like, not creating avatars and personas. I'm very much like I want to work with the people who see the value, see the product, and connect the dots themselves. And maybe this just goes back to so many years of client work. But like, it's the same reason why I don't want the client that's going to, you know, give me grief over the tiniest little thing over here, or, you know, hey, if you don't do this feature, I'm going to cancel with you. Get rid of that client, because they'll hold you hostage the next time as well, right? Same thing with, like, the client. Like, in order for someone to buy the thing that has the most value for them, do I really want to have to get that person to take 15 different steps to get there? Because that just means they're going to have to take 15 different steps to do the next thing I want them to do. Or do I want to surround myself with customers and clients who will, after one or two steps, maybe none, jump right to see the value immediately and say, oh yeah, that all access pass for $180 a quarter, that is like, that is a no brainer. Sure, I'll sign up for that. Or, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm stuck with this. Like, it's funny, because I know the funnels work. I don't want to play the game.
Yeah, it's like, I'm kind of the same way. It's like, I've gotten to the point where it's like, all the marketing that I do is like, I market the way that I want to be sold to.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I talk to my clients the same way that I want them to talk to me, and the same way I want people that I work with, that I'm their customer, I want them to talk to me that way. My only fear is that I'll eventually narrow myself down into a market of like 10 people.
Yeah, there's you can niche too far.
Yeah. Interestingly though, like whenever, and we got to go, but interestingly, like whenever someone says like, oh, I don't want to be in a niche market because I'll never make money. I mean, look at how I started with Thrive Themes, one of the most obscure page builders on the planet. And that was a multi six figure business. It still is. It's just like, so there's, I think niching down is the best way to go. I'll always be a fan of that. All right. Well, thanks guys. Thanks everyone for showing up. If you watch the recording, oh, I have to bring this up. Time changes here. Rob, I know your time changes differently. Our time changes this weekend, I think. So for you, that means this will feel like this will actually change times for you, Rob. Because your time doesn't change until the end of March, right?
Yeah.
So I think the community automatically translates the time for you.
I'll pay close attention.
Just check it. I think it's going to be an hour earlier or later. I can never figure it out for you.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll pay attention to the times. And then anyone that watches this, don't forget times change. All right.
Cool.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, have a good weekend, though. Bye.
Bye-bye.